Welcome back to A Year of War and Peace, the podcast where we go from War and Peace Zero to War and Peace Hero in 1 year flat. We are up to Book 5, Chapter 17. In June, the Battle of Friedland was fought, in which the Pavlograds did not take part, and after that an armistice was proclaimed. Rostov, who felt his friend's absence very much, having no news of him since he left and feeling anxious about his wound and the progress of his affairs, took advantage of the armistice to get leave to visit Denisov in hospital. The hospital was in a small Prussian town that had been twice devastated by Russian and French troops. Because it was summer, when it was so beautiful out in the fields, the little town presented a particularly dismal appearance with its broken roofs and fences, its foul streets, tattered inhabitants, and the sick and drunken soldiers wandering about. The hospital was in a brick building, with some of the window frames and panes broken, and a courtyard surrounded by the remains of a wooden fence that had been pulled to pieces. Several bandaged soldiers, with pale, swollen faces, were sitting or walking about in the sunshine in the yard. Directly after Rostov entered the door, he was enveloped by a smell of putrefaction and hospital air. On the stair, he met a Russian army doctor smoking a cigar. The doctor was followed by a Russian assistant. "I can't tear myself in pieces," the doctor was saying. "Come to Makar Alexeyevich in the evening. I shall be there." The assistant asked some further questions. "Oh, do the best you can. Isn't it all the same?" The doctor noticed Rostov coming upstairs. "What do you want, sir?" said the doctor. "What do you want? The bullets having spared you, do you want to try typhus? This is a pest house, sir." "How so?" asked Rostov. "Typhus, sir. It's death to go in. Only we two, Makiev and I," he pointed to the assistant, "keep on here. Some five of us doctors have died in this place. When a new one comes, he is done for in a week," said the doctor with evident satisfaction. "Prussian doctors have been invited here, but our allies don't like it at all." Rostov explained that he wanted to see Major Denisov of the Hussars, who was wounded. "I don't know, I can't tell you, sir, only think. I am alone in charge of three hospitals with more than 400 patients. It's well that the charitable Prussian ladies send us 2 pounds of coffee and some lint each month, or we should be all lost," he laughed. 400, sir, and they're always sending me fresh ones. There are 400, eh?" he asked, turning to the assistant. The assistant looked fagged out. He was evidently vexed and impatient for the talkative doctor to go. "Major Denisov," Rostov said again. "He was wounded at Molotin." "Dead, I fancy. Ah, Makiev?" inquired the doctor in a tone of indifference. The assistant, however, did not confirm the doctor's words. "Is he tall and with reddish hair?" asked the doctor. Rostov described Denisov's appearance. "There was one like that," said the doctor, as if pleased. "That one is dead, I fancy. However, I'll look up our list. We had a list. Have you got it, Makiev?" "Makar Alexeyevich has the list," answered the assistant. "But if you'll step into the officers' wards, you'll see for yourself," he added, turning to Rostov. "Ah, you'd better not go, sir," said the doctor, "or you may have to stay here yourself." But Rostov bowed himself away from the doctor and asked the assistant to show him the way. "Only don't blame me," the doctor shouted up after him. Rostov and the assistant went into the dark corridor. The smell was so strong there that Rostov held his nose and had to pause and collect his strength before he could go on. A door opened to the right, and an emaciated, sallow man on crutches, barefoot and in underclothing, limped out, and leaning against the doorpost, looked with glittering, envious eyes at those who were passing. Glancing in at the door, Rostov saw that the sick and wounded were lying on the floor on straw and overcoats. "May I go in and look?" "What is there to see?" said the assistant. But just because the assistant evidently did not want him to go in, Rostov entered the soldier's ward. The foul air, to which he had already begun to get used in the corridor, was still stronger here. It was a little different, more pungent, and one felt that this was where it originated. In the long room, brightly lit up by the sun through the large windows, the sick and wounded lay in two rows, with their heads to the walls, and leaving a passage in the middle. Most of them were unconscious and paid no attention to the newcomers. Those who were conscious raised themselves or lifted their thin yellow faces, and all looked intently at Rostov with the same expression of hope, of relief, reproach and envy of another's health. Rostov went to the middle of the room and, looking through the open doors into the two adjoining rooms, saw the same thing there. He stood still, looking silently around. He had not at all expected such a sight. Just before him, almost across the middle of the passage on the bare floor, lay a sick man, probably a Cossack to judge by the cut of his hair. The man lay on his back, his huge arms and legs outstretched. His face was purple, his eyes were rolled back so that there were only whites to be seen, and on his bare legs and arms, which were still red, the veins stood out like cords. He was knocking the back of his head against the floor hoarsely, uttering some word which he kept repeating. Rostov listened and made out the word. It was drink, drink, a drink. Rostov glanced around, looking for someone who could put this man back in his place and bring him water. "Who looks after the sick here?" he asked the assistant. Just then a commissariat soldier, a hospital orderly, came in from the next room, marching stiffly, and drew up in front of Rostov. "Good day, Your Honour," he shouted, rolling his eyes at Rostov and evidently mistaking him for one of the hospital authorities. "Get him to his place and give him some water," said Rostov, pointing to the Cossack. "Yes, Your Honour," the soldier replied complacently, and rolling his eyes more than ever, he drew himself up still straighter, but did not move. "No, it's impossible to do anything here," thought Rostov, lowering his eyes, and he was going out, but became aware of an intense look fixed on him on his right, and he turned. Close to the corner, on an overcoat, sat an old, unshaven, grey-bearded soldier, as thin as a skeleton, with a stern, sallow face and eyes intently fixed on Rostov. The man's neighbour, on one side, whispered something to him, pointing at Rostov, who noticed that the old man wanted to speak to him. He drew nearer and saw that the old man had only one leg bent under him. The other had been amputated above the knee. His neighbour on the other side, who lay motionless some distance from him with his head thrown back, was a young soldier with a snub nose. His pale, waxen face was still freckled, and his eyes were rolled back. Rostov looked at the young soldier, and a cold chill ran down his back. "Why, this one seems," he began, turning to the assistant. "And how we've been begging, Your Honour," said the old soldier, his jaw quivering. "He's been dead since morning. After all, we're men, not dogs. I'll send someone at once. He shall be taken away at once," said the assistant hurriedly. "Let us go, Your Honour." "Yes, yes, let us go," said Rostov hastily, and lowering his eyes and shrinking, he tried to pass unnoticed between the rows of reproachful, envious eyes that were fixed upon him, and went out of the room. All right, there we have it, another chapter down, and a pretty grim chapter. Not a whole lot to unpack there. Still, I feel like this is a turning point chapter for young Rostov. Hopefully, at least. Hopefully it's opened his eyes a bit, because he's so naive and he's so kind of gung-ho that I'm hoping with walking through this hospital and seeing these people dying and dead, that he might be starting to realize the consequences, real consequences, of how fast a human life can go from everything's okay and everything's fantastic to hell on earth. I mean, he is gung-ho, even in this chapter. The doctor says, you know, all the patients here are basically going to die. Even the doctors who turn up here are dead within a week. If you go in this place, you will die too. And what does Nikolai Rostov do? Yeah, I'll be fine. And he goes on in. Things are not looking good for Denisov too, if this is where he's ended up. Reddit user Garrock asks the question, Rostov descends into the hell that is the hospital for the sick and injured. Do you think word of the conditions in military hospitals was well known amongst the rank and file in the army, or do you think these conditions were especially surprising to Rostov? Bear in mind that the last chapter, Denisov seemed relieved to go to the hospital. It seemed to me that it was a surprise to Rostov. He probably knew that it was bad. It seemed that it was already known that, you know, the hospital wasn't somewhere that you went to recover, but more so as somewhere that you went to die. And I don't really think that Denisov did seem relieved to be going to hospital. I think he was just relieved to be escaping from his punishment. But I don't think that that is at all where he wanted to end up. Avid reader 12345 said, I think that if Rostov would have known about the condition of the hospital, he wouldn't actually think of going there. He's probably just being naive again. Yeah, I think he must surely have known he was going to see dead people and dying people in this hospital. He knew it was a grim place, but I do think it was naive of him to think that it wouldn't affect him. He'd be fine to just go there, pop in, pop out. I think the reality of it hit him harder than he was expecting it to. JMama8779 said, I'm not sure if this is Rostov's wake-up call, but it's a strong push in the right direction. That line with the old soldier's quivering lip, after all, we're men, not dogs, hit me hard. Who Was Once Delight responded that in the PNV translations, that line read, we are people too, not dogs. That too hit hard for me, so much for brutish happiness. Garrock also asked the question, will this display have any long-term effect on Rostov? Do you think he will shift towards a worldview more in line with Pierre's, acknowledging that the treatment of the commons needs improvement, or will he just put this from his mind? Avid reader 12345 said, so far not much has seemed to touch Rostov really deeply. His trouble in the beginning of his army life, the affair with Sonya, and even his money trouble. It all seems to be over kind of briefly. I'm waiting for the big wake-up call, but maybe he's just slowly going to grow up, and this hospital visit is one step on the way. Alright, so not a whole lot to unpack from this chapter, but it did leave a couple of questions in my mind. Firstly, will Rostov change from this point? Will this experience in the hospital have affected him deeply enough that he'll change his ways? And the other question I have is, of course, what is the fate of Denisov? It's most likely that he's dead. But hey, you know, we thought Prince Andrei was dead too. Tolstoy doesn't seem to be beyond resurrecting the main characters or having them narrowly escape death. And in fact, I'm starting to get this feeling with this book that some of the main characters are, you know, when you watch a Marvel film and you just think, they're all going to be fine. Starting to get that feeling. Like Rostov walking into the hospital and the doctor being like, oh, if you go in there, you will die. And Rostov is like, I'll be fine. And he goes in. And I kind of feel the same way. It's like, he will be fine. He's not going to get sick and die. That's not really the kind of thing that would happen to the main character in this book. I could be wrong. I could be very wrong. But I just had no fear at all that he's actually going to be killed off in such a underwhelming way. Anyway, that's going to do us for today. Thanks very much for listening, and I will see you tomorrow.